So I'll just ask you first, George, to introduce yourself and then maybe say hello as if you're talking to a room full of Australians.
Okay, well, hello, room full of Australians. I'm George Siemens. I'm currently the Associate Director at University of Manitoba in the Learning Technology Center with a specific focus on research and development. So I spend a good portion of my time looking at what's happening on several levels, but one, what's happening with technology and how does that influence the learning process. Secondly, which is a little more controversial, is what's happening with knowledge. You know, is knowledge itself changing or is it just its context and characteristics that are changing? And at a third level, looking at if one and two are true, then what does that mean to the institution? What does it mean to our educational facilities? What does it mean to even corporate training departments? So that's very quick overview what I spend my time doing.
That's perfect. I think I should just record you for an hour and you can be my presentation.
Sure, no problem. I'll send you a bill.
That's right on. Okay, checks in the mail. I'm thinking about you've been involved and written a lot about this concept of connectivism, and you've run some great online conferences. Can you sort of explain it in a nutshell, you know, your elevator speech version of this?
Sure. Well, I guess essentially, and I'll go, you know, Richard Feynman is quoted as saying, you know, if you could take physics and reduce it down to one, you know, one key concept, what would it be? It was a question that was posed to him, and his response was, everything is made of atoms. And so I think if I was to, you know, somebody was posed to me and say, you know, what is education? While I certainly lack the stature of Feynman, I would say it all boils down to connections. And at the heart of it, whether we're talking a pedagogy, whether we're talking an epistemology, the primacy of the connection in the learning process is really what makes learning work. And when I looked at existing theories of learning, primarily they attended well to how does, let's say, learning happen cognitively or how does it happen socially. But the one big element that I think a lot of us saw emerging within blogs and wikis or playing around with Skype or these other technologies now with Second Life was that it really starts at a point of connection, the ability to form a connection with someone. And so basically put forward the notion that really learning is a network formation process. And that can happen on many levels. It can happen on, obviously, on an internal level, a neuroscience level, which I am not qualified to speak on, but, you know, how our neurons form connections and thereby we gain understanding and consciousness. Which connectionism, which has far greater history than what I've talked about with connectivism, and also on an external level, namely our ability to be competent, to know, to understand complex situations, is really related to the quality of the network of sources that we've accessed. So if I have a broad network of people that I can go to for information or that I read regularly from broad disciplines, it's the quality of that network and the currency of that network that really determines the quality of my understanding, the depth of my understanding, or the quality of my learning experience. So to reduce it down to a sentence, with connectivism, it's about the primacy of the connection between learner to learner, learner to content, learner to the instructor or whoever it is that is guiding the learning experience. And it's that connection that forms the subsequent basis for all the complexity of learning. And traditional theories haven't paid, I think, at least significant attention to the primacy of that connection.
Excellent. Now, specifically, I didn't hear any mention of technology in that sentence, although, you know, you kind of touched on it as, you know, kind of being things that we're seeing now that are enabling this, and the things you spoke about ring very true to me, and I think you, because we're kind of involved with this. On a larger extent, is the educational enterprise, are we making any progress towards this? How are, you know, are you seeing any optimistic signs of change or not?
Well, and I think, first of all, you made a very important point, which is that, technology does, it plays a role, but it doesn't play the critical central role. So we could say, well, there's certainly a lot going on with technology. I mean, it takes a few minutes to, and nowadays, I'm inundated with, Web 2.0 book chapter requests and conference themes are focused on Web 2.0. So traditional academic systems have really picked up on this Web 2.0 thing. And it's important to acknowledge Web 2.0 is a dual element. There's the conceptual element, and I hate the term Web 2.0, but nonetheless, there's the conceptual element of freedom, openness, the ability to connect as you will, and then there's the secondary element, which is the technology and the tools themselves. I think institutions can start to work with tools without sort of understanding the conceptual focus that's emerging. And that puts us in a bad spot. I think in order to implement a different approach to learning and to design our systems, we need to grasp both that we're dealing conceptually with a different approach to who's the creator, who's the expert, who validates, how is expertise determined. That's the conceptual element that needs to be understood. And secondly, the tool-based approach. And the tool-based approach is far more, I guess it's easier to adopt because you don't actually have to change a system to use a blog. You don't have to change how a business or how an organization or a school is structured to start collaborating with wikis or to have individuals active in Second Life. But I think you can only go so far with those tools if you don't start looking at the systemic or the conceptual focus. We can happily go out and, as you know, an existing faculty and I see at the university can start to play with blogs and wikis. But once you walk any distance down that path, you quite quickly come up to the point of, wait a second, you know, we're bumping into too many of our organization's views of who is the expert or how should we collaborate or what kind of policies should we use. So it doesn't take long. If you start with the tools, you're going to end up dealing with the systemic issues. And to get to your question, I think I've seen certain organizations that are making progress. I did some work with IBM recently, and they've got a good handle on what's happening, and they're experimenting with what does it mean to the shape of an institution or to the shape of an organization. Similar with I did a social network analysis with a group department at Duke Corporate Education, and the same experience there. They are eager to embrace and they're prepared to rethink how they've designed their organization. The academy, on the other hand, I think has been a little bit more reluctant to acknowledge the depth of that change and to then rethink how it organizes itself. So I'm a little more pessimistic on that front.
Yeah, and I'd have to agree. So, you know, you're talking about the tool-based approach is sort of, you know, tinkering on the edges and getting some small successes. And that's sort of what we see with sort of the lone wolf pioneers who will try some of this stuff. Can you think of any educational institutions that maybe have chipped away a little bit? You know, you mentioned Duke Corporate. Anybody else kind of leap to mind as maybe even having the potential to make some of this change?
Well, I guess you see it in pockets. You don't see it sort of system wide. You know, I have Lee Blackall, who probably be known to some of your Australian audience. You know, some of the work that he's been able to do, and at least, you know, maybe not critical, you know, maybe not the sole driving force in his own organization, but just seeing these university environments start to say, you know, why don't we share our curriculum with each other, or why don't we put our curriculum in a wiki so that others have access to it as well? We're seeing broad groups, consortiums that are opening up access to their educational material, whether it's the Open Courseware Initiative, whether it's the work that David Wiley's doing. So certainly there are pockets where things are starting to happen, and really that's probably how it works. That's how change will unfold, is a few cracks here and there, and suddenly, you know, we'll have this this wave of change wash over us. But at this point, I see certain university departments that are starting to experiment with Second Life. They've got their island set up. I see librarians, for as much as they get mocked sometimes for, you know, being out of touch, I've seen some really innovative librarian projects or library-based projects where they're starting to experiment with social networking services, and they're starting to use or acknowledge that people are seeking information differently than they once did. Another one, I think it's the Power Museum, actually out of Australia, that has started to use tagging for their online exhibit, so people can come by, look at a resource, tag it a certain way. And so, yeah, we're seeing parts of it where we acknowledge we interact with information and perhaps knowledge differently than we once did. I'm not sure I see it wholesale. I don't see a significant, a university, for example, that's completely built, it's revised its premise on how it'll interact with content and with each other. But at least we're seeing pockets of it. One project that we've done in our department here at the university is the use of social networking services to have students increase their ability to interact with each other, and then to combine that with existing support services. So, for example, if you're looking for help on writing an essay, you have that available, but by the same account, you have a social networking service where you can connect with other learners that maybe have shared interest. Vincent Tinto has done work that talks about social and academic integration are the two biggest factors for determining whether students will stay with a university or with a college. And I think we're starting to explore those options. But I mean, and I'd be interested to hear from you. Are you familiar with organizations that are making substantial change in higher education?
The one that I leave to a lot is, because I spent some time there, is over at University of Mary Washington, where Gardner Campbell's at, and they've kind of set up this whole R&D environment using an external hosting company that allowed faculty to do a lot of experimentation with blogs, wikis, etc., off the network, and gave people a taste of what is possible. And they're kind of starting on a big blogging initiative, but it's hard to say. I think by the time you identify someone, it'll be like suddenly ubiquitous. email used to be a novelty, and we don't think of it anymore. The web, used to be a thing of, limited, reach and exposure, and now, you can't go anywhere out in the world and not trip over a URL. So I think it'll sneak in on us.
Well, and I think to a degree, I mean, that's the nature of the change is we're seeing these little pockets. We're seeing a few innovators, and actually they're far more common. I remember, I think it was probably about 7 years ago, standing in front of, when I was still at Red River College, standing in front of a group of faculty. There's about 100 people all together. There was a VP and senior administration was there, and I was trying to convince them that every faculty or every department in the college should have a blog. We could aggregate that blog and all of us could have an increased awareness of what's happening. So the administrative assistant in each department would sort of put up a what's going on with key departmental activities. And I remember the look back that I received, which was essentially, what the heck are you doing here?
What are you smoking?
No kidding. Is it legal? And so the response then was very much this disconnect between, for two reasons. One was, as I've already mentioned, conceptually, the notion of openness and open access and sharing was not very prominent at that point and still isn't in many places, but it's more so than it used to be. And secondly, the tool. I mean, when someone says blog, you felt like, saying Gesundheit or something. So it was a term that wasn't understood. And now we've made progress on both fronts. The tools are much more common, but even then, it's not washing over the institution in its entirety. It's we're seeing these, like I said, these little cracks. And exactly like you said, over time, they'll sort of gel, and all of a sudden, overnight, everyone will declare a revolution that took a decade or so to form.
And it's, for the people in the technical field, it's like, yeah, blog technology that was viable in 2000, but it's still just kind of touching on the shores of the mainstream.
And the thing I've been thinking about is, really, how long will these technologies stay unique? Whether it's a blog or whether it's a wiki. I'm even now starting to see implementations where they're not calling them blogs, but they are blogs by a definition of the term, but they're being implemented as whatever. It could be a learning journal, it could be pick a name. So I think that's an important thing not to lose sight of is what to misplace, and as I mentioned earlier, but to misplace the emphasis on the tool is to overlook probably the greater aspect of the change. I don't necessarily feel that these current tools will retain a unique, separate identity in the long run. I think they'll eventually just merge into it, and effective learning practices will dictate we'll use whether it's a wiki or a blog or audio or podcast or video or go into virtual environments. I think good learning practices eventually will overwrite the distinctness of, well, Second Life is maybe a little different because it's much more different than a blog or a wiki. But it's not the technology that's the real point of emphasis here. It's the fact that we are more precise in our ability to use these tools to achieve educational aims.
There it is, the power quote. That was very cool. I was going to ask you, oh, like more nuts and bolts. What social networking tool are you using, just for my own curiosity?
Well, I think, and this is this is one of those instances where you spend a lot of time thinking and talking about it, and then you look at your own practices. And I know a lot of people absolutely love Twitter, and I played with Twitter for a while. And it's just you find quickly that certain tools don't mix with certain personalities. So I've kind of faded from the Twitter scene. I'll come back on periodically. So that hasn't been huge. Facebook, I played with Facebook, but it very quickly got too much chaos or too much noise for my interest. I was getting invites from family and friends and colleagues to join all kinds of things that I genuinely didn't have interest in. There was too much static in my social network. So surprisingly, I've reverted back to the social network that started it all for me, which was, blogs, RSS readers, following the writing of other people. Sometimes you throw an email exchange. Sometimes you're doing a Skype call like we're doing here. So my social network is primarily about connecting with people whose ideas are important for me to be aware of because they help to inform my own understanding of the world. And it's not a social network that someone has formed for me. And I think this is a really important distinction. It's a social network that we form ourselves. So whether we spend that time in a virtual environment or whether we spend that time hanging out on a, whatever, we could be in Facebook, we could be in Ning, we could be in MySpace, we could be in LinkedIn. Eventually, it's the aggregate of all these activities that creates the social network as I think we understand it.
I see a new diagram and acronym for personal social network environments.
It's just a matter of time. You better get that out the door before anyone else does.
Yeah. Well, you get co-credit. Now, you had mentioned that your school is using something with your students for doing some social networking. I was curious what they were using.
Well, it's actually a program that we wrote. We being defined as just before I got here last year in September, it was already in progress, and it was based on really a Facebook concept, and we used a tag cloud, the 43 things kind of tag cloud, and whatever had the most people. Let's say, I mean, what you get what students do, right? They're surprised. Not everyone wants to perfect the writing of an essay. There's a lot of stuff on, I want to meet new people, or I want to, learn how to learn a different language, or learn how to snowboard. And so, but we found quickly that we understood tag clouds because we've grown up with them, but the majority of our students were completely confused by what a tag cloud was. And I think that's a big challenge I always have, is stepping out of the sort of fringe world that I live in with exploring technologies and signing up for every new service that comes along. That most people aren't wired that way. Most people are more inclined to take a tool and use it well and probably use it a little more deeply. And that essentially with Tag Cloud. So we stripped away Tag Cloud. We just went with the sequential Facebook. This is what so and so is doing. Someone updated their profile. It's campus-wide, and individuals connect with each other based on shared interests. So you create your profile, and I think that there's value in these geographical-based social networks. It comes a bit out of the work that Barry Wellman has done out of University of Toronto, where people who are digitally connected and geographically located actually meet more often than people who are geographically located but not digitally connected. And that was a bit of the intent in a university environment to say, we are a unique community. And why should one network like Facebook broadly brush our entire unique community elements or sweep it away into this global Facebook identity? Sure, these Facebook communities work, but it doesn't capture the spirit of a place. So that's basically, to varying degrees, the intent that we were hoping to achieve with our site. And coincidentally, if you're interested, I can send you a URL and just a password access. You can poke around in it. All the contents of the site are public, so anyone can look at it, but to participate, you need to be logged in.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. In fact, I was going to ask if I could at least even get a screenshot because I'd like to talk about it. I think that's a wonderful concept to say.
I'll throw you a URL and the password. You can poke around and see what it's all about. But like I said, it brings Facebook slash social networking to a a university campus.
Excellent. Well, thank you, George. I'm going to stop recording now.